Thank you, McDonald, for that opening prayer. Now we will continue. One of the scriptural principles we have is that parents, under the father's leadership, instruct children while children submit and obey. While children submit and obey. Who had the first passage over here? Okay, and then 3 and 4?
Proverbs 4. When I was only a little boy, my parents only saw. My father won't teach me. He would say, remember what I say, never forget. Do as I tell you, and you will live.
So, it is God's expectation that parents instruct their children, but what's God's expectation in the response of the children? That they obey. Okay? Now, who had the next passage over here? Okay.
Proverbs 6:20. My son, keep thy father's commandment, and forsake not the law of thy mother. Verse 23. For the commandment is a lamp, and the law is light, and reproofs of instruction are the way of life.
Thank you, sister. That is exactly right. God desires to bless your children through your instructions, not by you turning them over to strangers. Hey, who had the next passage over here? Yeah. God's expectation that children honor, obey, and submit to their parents. But whose responsibility is it to see that that happens? It is the parents' responsibility to see that that happens. You are not helpless. And I get so tired of hearing parents pretending like they're helpless. I just don't know. I just wish I had a good child like you. I just don't know why my child doesn't obey. Well, you know, I just don't understand it. It's so hard, you know. No, you know why? Because you're not willing to take the time to ensure it. It takes time and hard work to raise children. If you didn't want to do that, don't have children. If you're going to have children, raise them. But they're not plants. You don't just water them and feed them and see what happens. They are children. You must take care of them. You must be there. God entrusted them to you with that expectation. A man has 4 children. One is really good at reading, above grade level. One is poor, a poor reader. One is good at mathematics, but one, always above grade level, but one does very poorly on mathematics score. Same home, same parents, same teachers, same environment. Why? Two good students, two bad students, two make good grades, two make bad grades. Everything is the same. Why? Why is that? We've all seen that, haven't we? So why? What would you say? What would you say? Yes.
The good ones were well instructed by their parents, and they followed the commands of their parents. Maybe the took time to be with them and instruct them and make sure that they are always obeying and being still and doing what they are supposed to do. But the other ones, maybe when they started in the beginning,
Yeah.
That is how it works.
That's exactly right. Many people will say personality, gifts, genetics, but no, that's not the reason. The reason is the parents. Now, one child may be gifted in mathematics and the other not, but both will graduate above grade level. It's just more work with one child. One child may be a gifted reader and the other not. Both will graduate with honors in reading. It's just more work. Many parents, though, they have several children. They work hard with the first two, but then they get distracted by other things and become more lenient with the next two. Or they find themselves, they were too lenient with the first one, so they become stricter with the others. We need to give all of our children the attention they need to be successful. We need to deal with them as individuals and give them the time, the focus time, to ensure their success. You see, it's God's expectation that children are a blessing to their parents. Who had the next verse, please?
Proverbs 10:1. A wise son brings joy to his father, but a foolish son grief to his mother.
Yeah, and men, it is your responsibility to ensure that having children is a blessing to your wife. You come home at night, you discipline them, you train them so that she can enjoy being a mother. She is not house help and she is not their servant. And many mothers, after they have children, want to go back to work. And I can understand why you want to go back to work. If I had to live with your disobedient little children, I wouldn't want to be in the same house either. But the solution is not turning them over to torment some poor girl from the village as house help and some poor teacher, but to discipline them and teach them to honor and respect authority. That is your responsibility. Who had the next verse over here? Yeah, and that's very important for us to understand. Wise children will make happy parents. And if I could only help you understand the sorrow that will enter your life with your children's teenage years if you do not get on top of this early. That is your responsibility. Who had the next verse, please? Okay. Yeah. Yeah, and we want our children to be a blessing to grandma and grandpa. Not tearing up their house and running around. Okay. Yes, McDonald, you're next.
A fool despises his father's instruction, but the person who heeds correction is sensible.
Yeah. And we must help our children not to resent instruction, but to receive it. Not to fight against discipline, but to receive it. It is the parents' responsibility to ensure correct response of the children to authority. Ephesians 6:1. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. That is our responsibility to ensure that they are obedient to us, grandma, to their teachers, and in the church. So we look at their behavior and we think, how is this behavior going to affect them being successful in life? God uses very strong words to describe a child who rejects discipline. Let's look at 2 Timothy verse 3:2. 2 Timothy 3:2. For men will be lovers of self, lovers of money, boastful, arrogant, revilers, disobedient to parents, ungrateful, unholy, unlovable, irreconcilable, malicious gossips, without self-control, brutal haters of good, treacherous, reckless, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than of God. That's a terrible class of people, isn't it? And notice two traits of them. They are disobedient and they lack self-control. Look at your children. Your child is playing and you say, Hezekiah, come. What is obedience? What is obedience? What is disobedience? They don't. It takes self-control to obey. The class of children in 2 Timothy 3:2 do not obey. And they are put in a class of wicked people. We live in an age where certain wicked sins are not thought of as wicked, aren't we? Sexual promiscuity, well, that's just something that happens. No, it's wicked. Homosexuality, well, you know, maybe that's genetic. No, it's wicked. Children who do not obey their parents the first time, well, you know, they're just growing. No, it's wicked. Children who lack self-control, they can't sit still, they can't keep their hands to themselves, they can't be quiet. That's wicked in God's eyes. It doesn't matter what you think, does it? I'm sharing Christ with someone and I say, Hebrews 9:27, it is appointed for men to die once, and after that comes judgment. The man I'm sharing Christ with says, I don't think a loving God will send anyone to hell. Does that have anything to do with what God will do? No. A loving God will send people to hell, whether you think He will or not. And children who disobey their parents and do not exercise self-control are wicked, sinful children, whether you think they are or not. Doesn't matter what we think, it matters what God says, doesn't He? So you're going to believe all of the Bible but this verse. Oh yes, in Ephesians 6:1. Oh, and 2, and 3, and 4, and Proverbs, and Hebrews. Becomes difficult, doesn't it? You see, discipline in scriptures is not seen as punitive or bad. It is seen as good. Hebrews 12:10, God disciplines us for our good. Hebrews 12:6, we are all disciplined by loving parents. Parents should project the behavior of the disciplined child 10 years into the future. What will it look like? You're holding your child and he hits you or grabs your earring or scrapes your lip. What's that going to look like when that child is 13? You call your child runs away. What's that going to look like when your child is 15? Your child throws a temper tantrum and throws something at you. What's that going to look like when your child is 17? You say he will grow out of it. What bad habit do you ever grow out of? You're gaining weight. Your clothes are fitting tight. So if you just ignore it, you'll become thin, right? No. We don't grow out of bad habits. They become more entrenched. And it is your responsibility to deliver your children from irresponsible, uncontrolled behavior. God holds you responsible for that. Grace is not overlooking disobedience. It is the discipline of disobedience. MacDonald, Romans 1, 24 and 25. Claire, Romans 1, 26. Esther, Romans 1, 28. Noella, Hebrews 12, 5 through 11. Okay. Let's look at Romans 1, 24, please.
Romans 1, 24. Therefore, God delivered them over in the cravings of their hearts.
Okay. Thank you. English here. God delivered them. He gave them over. Did he intervene? No. Let the little darlings have their way. Romans 1, 25.
Romans 1, 25. They exchanged the truth of God for a lie and worshipped and saved something created instead of the Creator who is blessed forever.
And 26, who Claire, I believe that was yours.
This is why God delivered them over the degrading passions. For even their female...
Okay, we'll stop there. God gave them over. Romans 1:24, God gave them over. Romans 1:26, God gave them over. Romans 1:28.
Romans 1:28. And because there's nothing in one world to have God in their bodies, God delivered them over.
Okay, we'll stop there. Yeah. See what? Is God intervening on these people? Is he? No. He's just giving them over, isn't he? He's delivering them up. He's not disciplining them. He's not intervening in their lives. He's letting them have their own way. That's judgment. Seeing your child disobey and not intervening is the worst form of judgment on a child. On the other hand, what is grace? Hebrews 12, 5 through 11. This passage, and we see here that grace is God intervening, isn't it? Grace is God taking steps to save us from ourselves. It's not just delivering us over and letting us do anything we want to. That's judgment. See, we have this upside down, don't we? We think being a gracious mother is not disciplining our children, and being a discipliner is being judgmental. But it's just the opposite in God's value system. In God's value system, to not intervene and let a child live out their disobedient actions, that's a cruel judgment. A loving parent will intervene and discipline the child so the child can be a success. And I don't know how many times I've had parents who've come to my early years of child raising seminar and they haven't applied these things. Now their children are teenagers, and they want me to tell them how to raise a teenager. They want me to put a gold roof on a straw house, don't they? They've built their house with wood, hay, and stubble, and now they want something heavy and magnificent and beautiful to cap it out. So don't do that. Start with the foundation of Christ and then build on it with obedience and honor and respect and self-control in your home and in school, and expect that from your children. When your children read, all loving parents discipline their children, what will they think when they're adults? Will they remember you lovingly disciplining them? Or will they not have anything to say? That's very important for us. Now, when we talk about discipline, God has chosen a tool of discipline. So, McDonald, will you read Proverbs 13:24? Claire, will you read Proverbs 22:15? Noella, will you read Proverbs 23:13-14? This sister over here, this sister, would you read Proverbs 29:15, please? Let's look at Proverbs 13:24. 22:15, I believe. Proverbs 13:24.
Proverbs 13:24. The one who will not use the rod hates his son, but the one who loves him disciplines him diligently.
Now, I was giving this seminar in Helsinki, Finland, and a Finnish father stood up and said, I have never spanked my child, and I love my child, and you can't say I don't love my child. Now, how would you respond? You respond the same way when somebody says, I don't think a loving God will send anyone to hell. I'd say, it's not up to me, it's the Word of God. God defines love. You want to define love as not spanking. Your children will grow up reading verses on spanking, but you did not obey them because of love. Now your child is a teenager, and you're telling them to obey the Bible and not sleep with their boyfriend or girlfriend. But you've already set the precedence that love overrules Bible, haven't you? So their love can now overrule the Bible in sexual promiscuity. You can't have it both ways. If you want your children to grow up obeying the Bible, you have to grow up modeling obeying the Bible. Proverbs 22:15. Now, for a child, what is the key to driving out foolishness? The rod. It's the Bible. Now, Western Europeans have rejected this. And we see what it's resulted in, haven't we? Secularism, homosexuality, divorce, disintegration of the family. It's a package deal. The same people who want you to question the use of the rod in the family want you to question all values in the family, don't they? Proverbs 23:13-14.
Proverbs 23:13-14. Do not withhold discipline from a child. If you punish him with the rod, he will not die. Punish him with the rod and save his soul from death.
The rod is a tool of grace, isn't it? A child is born foolish. Left to himself, the child will remain foolish. The rod brings foolishness out and opens up the heart for the gospel. It's the Bible. Proverbs 29:15.
The rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame.
Yeah. And ladies, many of you should be ashamed, but you're not. You think it's funny or cute. You're out, it's after the church is over with, and instead of your child standing there close to you, they're running around like chickens, and you don't know where they are. You're at the dinner table, your child is making a mess. They won't eat their food. Their child won't let you take a nap. They won't let you read the Bible. They won't let you talk on the phone. They won't let you cook a meal. They won't stay in bed. They won't even let you use the toilet in peace. You should be ashamed. But you're not. The most obedient, respectful children, the one that the teachers look forward to having in school, the ones that are always graduating on the top of their class, should be Christian children. But that's your responsibility to ensure that witness. Remember, all other methods besides the rod are experimental. I didn't experiment on my children. In Houston, there is a large clinical research facility, and if you want to allow them to experiment on you, they will pay you to do it. You know, they've done it on the computer, then they've done it on dogs, but now they have to have clinical trials on humans. And so they'll give you free medicine, plus they'll pay you. But I've never taken part in that, nor have I used that for my children, because I don't experiment on my children. What is new is never tried. What is tried and true is never new. So we know the rod is spoken of in the Bible. We don't know how these children of these parents who are advocating something else are going to turn out. So instead, we use the rod. Now, let's all turn to Proverbs 27:22. Proverbs 27:22. Who would like to read that, please? Okay, Noella, sure. Yeah. Now, foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. The rod removes it. But once the child ceases to be a child, we no longer use the rod. And when a child turns 13, they are called what? Teenagers or youth. So for us, the time period of the rod was about 9 months to a year to age 12. And the primary period was that first 5 years. Parents say, well, I think my child is too young to obey. Why is your child old enough to disobey, but not old enough to obey? Why is your child old enough to spit food out of their mouth at you, or throw their food at you, but not old enough to eat it? Why are they old enough to knock it off the tray or off the table, but not eat it? Why are they old enough to run away or crawl away when you call them, but not crawl to you? Well, we know they're old enough to obey because they're old enough to disobey. And once your child begins to disobey, you use the rod to teach them to obey. Once the child is 12 or older, we don't use the rod anymore, because the Bible says You can grind them up. You can pound them like pounded yam, and nothing will change. But that's the Bible. So, how are we going to discipline our children with the law? It's going to be very basic. We instruct, we discipline, we instruct, and then we restore. We instruct, we discipline, we instruct, and then we restore. You're having tea with one of the sisters in the church, and a little Johnny comes walking by, and he touches the plant and he's holding it. So no. And you, first you're going to instruct. You say, Johnny, that makes mommy very mad. I'm happy. You know that plant was at grandma's funeral. That's very special to mommy. That plant can be bruised very easily. You know you're not supposed to touch that plant. What did Johnny hear? Blah, 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 mommy. Blah, 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 grandma. Blah, 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 mommy. Because those were the only words you used in his vocabulary. So, you get down at Johnny's level, and you point and say, no. This is no. And then Johnny say, no. No. That's right. Now Johnny's crying. Does the Bible say foolishness is bound up in the heart of the child, but crying removes it? Is it a good wisdom in life skill to learn to use emotions to escape consequences? No, it's not. So don't reinforce that. It will make for a happy, unhappy marriage and unhappy life. Now I would say, hello, Johnny, put your hands on your cheek and lie on the couch. Or put your hands on your cheek and lie on my leg. Two strokes. Whack. Whack. Two strokes. Oh! Now what are we? We've instructed. We've removed discipline. Now we are going to instruct again. Why did you get the spank?
I didn't know.
That's right. Say obey.
Obey.
Then you restore. You kiss him and restore him. When the prodigal son repented, did the father restore him? That's the model. When Absalom repented, did David restore him? No, he didn't. And it resulted in vandalism and rebellion and sorrow. When our children repent, we restore them immediately. It is instruct, discipline, instruct, restore. So then we begin thinking, what areas are we going to instruct, discipline, instruct, restore? Well, the first thing is we think, what are the keys of success for our children, don't we? Now, Eleanor and I came up with five areas. These were things which we felt like that if our children mastered by the time they were 2 years old, they would do well. And we could teach them other things. We call it the Big Five. It is know, obey, open, or give, come, and hush. And we began working with them one at a time. You work on one thing at a time. So you start with no. What is no? No is not doing something. The light plug is no. Things on the kitchen table, it's no. Mommy and Daddy's bedroom is no. They have boundaries. Children need to grow up with boundaries so that when they're teenagers, they are used to having boundaries. This is no. Parents say, my children are so unthankful. I say, why should they be thankful? When they want to watch TV, what do? They turn it on. When they want to get something to drink, what do? they get something to drink. When they want something to eat, what do? They either get it, or worse yet, they command the house help to get it for them, like they were some little lord or a lady of the manor. If they want to go into your room, what do? They go in your room. There's no reason for them to be thankful. They do whatever they want to. All those things a child should be required to ask before they do it. They should understand that these things are privileges, not rights. And then they grow up being thankful. Why should anyone be thankful if they get everything they want without asking? So no. What is number two? Number two is obey. We would teach our children this phrase, I will obey mommy quickly the first time. Not the second time, not the third time, the first time. How many opportunities will the judge give your child to obey the law? One. How many times will a teacher allow your child to take the test? One. That's all through life, isn't it? One time. How many times will the merchant allow your child to steal something? Zero. They have to pay for it every time. And so we teach our children to obey quickly the first time. You say, well, I don't think my children could hear me. Why is it that when you shout out to little Hezekiah, come, he doesn't hear you? But then you whisper to mommy at the dinner table, do you think we should have ice cream? And all the children come running, ice cream, ice cream, ice cream. Children hear what they want to hear, and you teach them to be attentive so that when they hear the still small voice of God speaking, that they will obey Him. I will obey mommy quickly the first time. You see, you have to ask yourself, who is being trained in your family? Are you training the child, or is the child training you? You're at the market and your child wants something. Do you have to give it to the child out of fear they will make a scene? You're at church and your child wants something. Do you have to give it to them out of fear they will throw a temper tantrum and be disruptive? Who is being trained? It is your responsibility to train the children. Many of you are being trained by your children. When my son was about 7 years old, he had a friend over and they were playing. They were playing with the toys on the floor. His mother came to pick him up. And she called out, Hezekiah, it's time to go. My son began to get up, but Hezekiah didn't get up. And he said, don't you have to go? And he said, and I saw this, no, not till she stamps her feet. A little bit later, she cried, Hezekiah, it's getting late. We have to be home for supper. Nothing. Then she, Hezekiah, and then she began, I said, I'm coming, and she began stamping her feet, and he got up and went. Who is trained? The mother. Who is training you? Will your children only eat certain things? Will they only behave under certain conditions and environments? Are they training you by disobedient temper tantrums? Or are you training them? I will obey. Open and give. When you tell your child to open their mouth, do they open it? If they have something in their hand, do they give it? What's in your hand? And they squeeze it, and then they break the earrings your husband gave you for your anniversary. What's in your mouth? And they swallow it. And then you hear your husband say, Grandma's cancer medicine is open. We're counting the pills. You see, that foolish child, isn't it? You tell your child to come. Will your child come? Why should your child pick up his cross daily and follow Jesus when he won't come to mommy when mommy calls him? Why should your child come and do what the teacher instructs when you don't require him to come? That's training for his success, isn't it? And then hush. Your children should exhibit the fruit of the spirit of self-control by not having to talk or scream or throw temper tantrums. That is very important. Know, obey, open, give, come, hush. Begin working on these with your children. And if they don't obey in these areas, if they are disobedient, you instruct, you discipline, you instruct, and then you restore. Now, in the next session, we're going to look at the training process itself. How many spanks to give? How to do it. But we'll stop now, take a break.